So just like yesterday.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, take a breather.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have convened the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for February the 27th, 2018. We are here together today for two work sessions, one on House Bill 4063 relating to autonomous vehicles and the other Senate Bill 1516 relating to Small Business Expansion Loan Fund. I will open a work session on House Bill 4063 and ask Mr. Jolivet to introduce the issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House Bill 4063 designates ODOT as the lead agency for autonomous vehicle programs and policies. It establishes a 26-member task force on autonomous vehicles. It requires the task force to develop recommendations to be considered for legislation, and that those recommendations be transmitted to the legislature via a report no later than September 15th, 2018. ODOT is required to provide staff support for the task force. And members, there's also a dash 8 amendment, which would add 5 members to the task force, including increasing the membership to 31 members. It adds representation for a nonprofit entity, the commercial truck manufacturing industry, a consumer protection advocate, and a public university. The measure is anticipated to have a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Jolivet? By minimal fiscal, you want to give us some sense of what minimal fiscal means, because there has been a great deal of difficulty in establishing other task forces, given Ways and Means predisposition to not have such things funded. You want to give us a sense? Is it like a red box, like a house, like a...
I believe ODOT estimated the cost to be in the range of about $40,000 other funds.
I see heads, ODOT heads, going up and down saying 40,000 other funds, and I presume those are internal to ODOT other funds. I again, for the record, see ODOT heads nodding in the affirmative. All right. Colleagues, any questions? Senator Monroe.
31-member task force?
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think they're going to have to meet in the House rather than in the Senate.
Truthfully, my experience has been that a small group can get things done better than a big group. And 31 is, I've never heard of a task force that huge.
Colleagues, any other questions or comments?
Sorry.
All right, we would invite forward anybody that wants to speak to the merits of a 31-member task force. Or ODOT, if you want to speak about the challenges of wrangling a 31-member task force.
While he's coming forward, Madam Co-Chair, I'll just note there's only 16 people in the audience here.
Yeah, that's half the task force.
Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Travis Brower, the Assistant Director of ODOT, and I'm here to testify in support of the HB 4063 with the dash 8A8 amendment. As to the comment about the size of the task force, we would generally agree that 31 members would be a tiny bit unwieldy if you were to expect all of them to meet in every meeting. However, given the way that the legislation breaks down the tasks that the task force would undertake, we would expect that much of the work of this task force would be done in subcommittees that would address each of these various issues that is listed in the legislation. And so,
could I stop you there for just a second? I got two questions. If it's done in subcommittees or sub-task forces, how do you assure that there's balance at the table? That's question number one. And question number two, in having perused the membership of the aforementioned Army task force, some of them are, somebody represents cybersecurity. How is that within the purview of the state of Oregon?
Madam Chair, in terms of the question of the purview around cybersecurity, in general, what we find is that in the area of motor vehicles, the federal government's role is to set the standards for vehicle safety, which would include cybersecurity in general. The state's role is to do licensing, registration, traffic laws, and insurance liability. And yet, this is a topic that is of great concern to quite a number of individuals, and we believe it's something that should at least be addressed and examined through this work, even if it's unlikely that the state of Oregon itself is going to promulgate specific cybersecurity standards, given the federal preemption in that area. And could you remind me of your second question?
The balance in these subcommittees. He who sets the table decides the menu. And it concerns me that if you break it into subs, you're going to end up with subs that may not be representative of a wide scope of interest that are, in fact, called out in this monster task force.
Madam Chair, you are very wise in raising that issue, and I think that that is something that we will wrestle with as we work through these issues. We do not have a specific plan for exactly how we will address each of the individual subcommittees, and yet, obviously, this is going to be a task force that, given the extensive interest, will be very open and transparent and open to the public as well. We will work to ensure that we have a balanced membership on each of these task force or each of these subcommittees to ensure that they don't trend in one direction that may not be broadly representative of the work. And of course, as you can see, there is a voting structure that any work product coming out of a subcommittee would be subject to approval by the task force as a whole, which I think has a very balanced representation overall.
Very diplomatic answer. Thank you. Colleagues, any other questions for Mr. Brower? Representative Reardon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Just curious, and I think it's implied by the makeup of the members on the task force, but what type of vehicles are covered in, do you anticipate being discussed in them?
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, this would be focused on the highly automated vehicles. There is a what we call the SAE, Society of Automotive Engineers, that has a level from 0 through 5, 0 being basically your standard vehicle just driving down the road with no automated functions, 1 being, you know, maybe it has the lane control functions, all the way up to 5, where literally there is no steering wheel, no brake pedal. We would be looking at the high end of this, levels 4 and 5, where largely the human is a passenger and for the most part will not be engaging in driving activity.
Better question. What I really meant was, is it cars, trucks, buses, motorcycles, or what vehicles?
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, I think that obviously the focus would be most likely on passenger vehicles, but I think that would be something that the task force could wrestle with a bit to determine whether there are issues in the area of, say, connected and automated trucks or buses that would be within the scope of this activity. So I think that they would probably look a little bit more broadly at that question.
If I may.
Follow up.
When I had a chat with some of the Teamsters earlier this year, they were very concerned about the impact on the trucking industry. The autonomous trucks that might be involved, and that's obviously a workforce issue. And so would that be covered in this task force? Or?
Chair Johnson, Representative Reardon, that is something that was obviously brought forward, and that's one of the reasons why you see transportation unions included in this, because they need to have a seat at the table as those discussions are going forward. My understanding is that right at the moment, we are not necessarily on the cusp of autonomous trucks being driven down the highways of Oregon. There have been connected trucks that Daimler has tested. And so that may be something that is a little bit further out in the future. And some of those issues around workforce are some of the longer term challenges that we know we're going to have to wrestle with. But I think a lot of the work of this task force will focus on what needs to be brought back to the 2019 legislative session in terms of our overall legal and regulatory framework within the state. So we will focus a lot on those issues that really need to be addressed, like liability and crash reporting and things like that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Colleagues, any other questions? I guess you touched. I'll take one more. Sorry. One more. The legal and regulatory framework. I'm discouraged when I hear you say that. What I'm hoping for is the innovation, the upstep in technology, the glorious opportunity for Oregon, and instead the answer comes back, regulatory and legal. Is that the purpose of this? We want to smother this opportunity in the cradle, or what are we trying to do?
Madam Chair, I think the goal here is to ensure that these vehicles, which we know will be coming at some point, have the opportunity to drive safely on Oregon roads in a way that ideally improves safety and mobility for Oregonians rather than, and that we mitigate any of those challenges that people see, the concerns about whether these vehicles will be secure from a cybersecurity standpoint, or more importantly, perhaps some of the issues that we know could happen with congestion if the autonomous vehicles allow for people to drive much longer distances and put more vehicles on the road, including zero occupancy vehicles. So these are the issues we're going to wrestle with. But I think to your point, there is a significant opportunity here, particularly in the area of safety. In 2016, there were 36,000 Americans who were killed in traffic crashes. While we know that technology will not be perfect, we're not going to get to zero deaths with autonomous vehicles. We know that humans are highly imperfect drivers. And in the realm of safety, we have a significant opportunity here to reduce the carnage that sometimes occurs on our streets.
Okay. I'm sure that those working in this space will eagerly await the work of the task force. Colleagues, any other questions? Anybody else filled by the spirit of testimony for this fine piece of public policy? Mr. Jolivet.
Madam Chair and members, LFO recommends adoption of the Dash 8 Amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 2 amendments.
Dash 8, excuse me.
38, 8, how many are we?
don't open that door. We'll all run through it. Colleagues, you have heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions, any discussion, any objection? The Dash 8s are adopted. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Would there be an additional recommendation?
LFO recommends that House Bill 4063, as amended by the Dash 8 Amendment, be moved to the Ways and Means Full Committee.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move adoption of the recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Question, Senator Hansel.
Discussion. I agree that with what's been said, shared here by my colleagues, that's a big task force, but it is what it is, and I'll be supportive.
Colleagues, any other comments? Any objections to the LFO motion, or to Co-Chair Gomberg's moving the LFO recommendation? There being none, move to full. Got any volunteers?
Sure. All right.
Well, I think we probably ought to leave it to Representative McLean on the floor. I think this is her bill, so we're going to need Ways and Means members. Representative Gomberg volunteers for full, and we got McLean in the House. We need a Senate person.
I'll do it if you wish. If
it would That's happen. How brave person. Senator Hansel will carry this on the Senate.
I don't want it.
All right. Thank you very much. I will close the work session on House Bill 4063A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1516A relating to Small Business Expansion Loan Fund. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1516 establishes the Small Business Expansion Loan Fund at the Oregon Business Development Department. And the department may transfer existing money in the Oregon Business Development Fund to the Small Business Expansion Loan Fund. The fund may be used to make loans to qualified individuals or businesses with 50 or fewer employees to support the acquisition of business assets or to pay for business operating expenses. Online, you'll find a Dash A2 amendment, which caps loan amounts at $2 million. And it also makes some non-substantive changes that were recommended by LC to clean up the statute.
Thank you very kindly. I see Oregon Business Development Department here. Would you all like to come forward and say anything about this bill? Because I've got questions. Mr. Batts, who's holding back for any particular reason?
John.
Thank you. Mr. Sarris, welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Sarris. I'm the finance manager at Business Oregon. The business group that I oversee at the department manages a suite of existing finance programs, and this is one that the department is here in support of. It's identified a niche in the financial continuum for early stage high growth companies seeking capital that will help support their growth, attract additional equity and venture capital, and position companies for later stage, more traditional commercial debt down the road, and would be certainly happy to answer any specific questions the committee may have.
Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Sarris? Representative Noble.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm curious, this is for businesses that have difficulty finding normal loans for business, and we're in an economic upturn, and it's probably arguable as how much of an upswing, but I think we all see some growth. Why would we need to supplement now when it seems business actually seems to be growing?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Noble, this program is a program that's been in development by the department for roughly about 10 years. Some of you may be familiar with a group that does what's called the Oregon Capital Scan on a every other year basis. One of the things that the scan did was basically look at the landscape of capital that's available to small businesses and identified opportunities and gaps where capital existed based on the growth stage of the company. Over the course of three iterations of that capital scan, one gap that was very prevalent is in this stage where companies have established a concept and they are ready for market. And basically, they're having a difficult time attracting capital because this is very high-risk capital. What's available to them based on where they're at is typically equity through angels and venture funds or mezzanine financing that typically converts debt over to an equity position in the company down the road. This particular fund helps bridge that gap and complements the private capital that's there. Not all companies are going to be a good fit for this. Examples may be, companies that don't have necessarily a high revenue market. They're not as scalable. Your traditional small businesses that are retail and service related companies are not going to be necessarily a good complement for this kind of program. Again, scalability, traded sector, high growth, high margin is going to be the niche that's being filled by a program like this.
Follow up.
And thank you. Where geography wise throughout the state with these companies, where we're most likely to find these companies?
Well, we obviously hope that they're statewide. The whole intent of the program is to serve small businesses where there are gaps in the capital. We see areas in rural communities where there's not the diverse access to capital that you would see in major metropolitan communities. The pipeline of projects that we're currently working with have come typically out of angel conferences that are held like the Ben Venture Conference, the Willamette Angel Conference. We're working with the Roseburg Area Angel Network, and also helping other networks establish themselves in Eastern Oregon and Southern Oregon as well. So it's pipeline activity that's coming out of angel networks and accelerators.
Colleagues, other questions? So, Representative Worden.
Oh, thank you, Co-Chair. Progressive Rep Reardon really thinks this is a great idea, and I really like it, and I do want to support it, but more fiscally conservative side says, well, I kind of want to know that, we're going to recover our investment. So do we have a track record with this, and other than, and then how are the actual investment decisions made? Who makes those?
Members of the committee, and I'll try to answer both questions, and please let me know if I don't. As far as who decides how loans are approved, we actually have a staff of 10 finance officers that have roughly 300 years of commercial lending experience. And so each credit that we look at and each applicant is going to be reviewed by people that have experience analyzing and assessing credit. As far as making good loans, obviously the state is very interested in doing that. The last thing that we want want to do is make a bad loan or the loan that puts a company out of business. These are going to be higher risk loans. If you look at the continuum of credit products that we have, this is going to be the riskiest product that we have because it's really serving companies that don't have an established track record and again are highly scalable. So we are looking to price the returns on this fund in a manner that it covers our administrative costs and losses. We have experience doing this with our Oregon Business Development Loan Fund, our Credit Enhancement Fund, and other programs. And we have a regulatory body that does provide oversight to us. The Commission of the Business Development Department has what's called their Finance Committee, which essentially is a loan committee, if you will, for the department. Any credit that we look at that exceeds $250,000 is automatically required to go to our loan committee for review and approval. They are the final decision makers on this. The department doesn't have any say beyond that. That committee is made up of a group of people with pretty significant financial experience. A lot of them are senior commercial lenders with financial institutions here in Oregon. We have a CPA, financial advisors, and a couple of people with some pretty significant just financial background.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Hanselman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was given an opportunity, kind of a target of opportunity earlier in the session on another issue that came before, you know, was in my district on a transfer of a payment to a group in LeGrand. You heard that I want to just do a shout out. The Business Oregon responded to that within the weekend. The money had been transferred, and I deeply appreciate that. So I want to give a public shout out for listening, hearing, and taking care of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gumberg.
Thank you, Co-Chair. And thanks for being with us this afternoon to take these questions. The acquisition of business assets, are we talking equipment, or are we talking inventory, or both?
Members of the committee, typically what we're doing with this is going to be working capital. They may acquire equipment. They also may be getting pieces that create their inventory. But what we've predominantly seen is working capital. People are hiring folks to market and promote their product or service, and they're basically selling and helping ramp productions.
Representative Meek.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Question related to the application process, and wanted to understand maybe the time frame of from the point of application to either successful award, how long it typically takes for a small business like this to get the funds they need.
Representative Meek, members of the committee, typically our target is to receive an application, process it, approve it, and document it when we don't have to go to committee within 4 weeks. So a lot of us that work at the department came out of commercial lending, private banking, have a lot of familiarity with what the speed of business means and how important it is for companies to receive capital at these critical moments. And so we have basically refined underwriting processes and a decision-making process already established with other programs.
Follow-up, Representative Meek.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I just want to put this on the record. As a small business owner, back in the 90s, I wish there was programs available like this because I needed the chance to fund a new hood that would have cost me $15,000, $20,000, but would have been a great resource to build my business and provide more service and product. And so definitely agree and appreciate the Business Oregon plan and would support this bill.
Thank you.
One last.
Sorry. Representative Reed.
I want to make sure I'm reading this. Thank you, Co-Chair. This is not new money. That's going into this fund. It's continuously appropriated from existing funds. Is that correct?
Representative Reardon, what is proposed in the bill is to do a transfer from an established Business Oregon program, the Oregon Business Development Fund, to this fund to capitalize it.
Okay. Thank you. Sounds good.
I have several questions, and Representative Meeks is a perfect segue. If they do buy equipment, who owns the title to that equipment?
Madam Chair, the state will do its due diligence on securing the assets that are with the loan. With this particular program, we generally could file a UCC filing on the assets and continue to follow them. This program does allow flexibility to look at a number of different ways to secure its loan, whether it's through the corporate or personal guarantees. We can take security on homes, and we can also take the assets that are being financed.
Mr. Saris, I'm still trying to find out what happened to a helicopter that got funded over in Eastern Oregon, and I believe the company failed. And I'm just curious if there was state money in the acquisition of that flying machine, what happened to it? We can get back to each other.
Gladly.
The other questions that I've got is, once upon a time, I was in a very capital-intensive business, and I have borrowed in seven figures. Mm-hmm. It's an experience I'm going to remember for a really, really, really long time. And I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do about collateralization. And $2 million is not an insignificant amount of money, and I'm not being disrespectful of the bankers that lurk in the bowels of OBDD, but I'm just trying to figure out, when I was offering up the sun and the moon and the stars for collateral in a traditional banking setting, and I was a pretty good credit risk, why is it that we're taking these incredibly high-risk businesses offering up to $2 million, if I heard the introduction to the bill correctly? A little vague, I got to be honest with you, a little vague on who owns the equipment if equipment is purchased. And I'm just trying to figure out, what's the wisdom of us putting taxpayer money at risk with high-risk loan recipients?
Madam Chair, I think that a couple of points that I'd like to clarify on this. Currently, the loan cap, and we have this program as a pilot within the Oregon Business Development Loan Fund, and by moving it into its own fund, we're protecting the integrity of a program that supports traded sector activities and supporting high-growth companies and their needs specifically with this. The department has a cap of $250,000, and I don't foresee that changing unless there's a significant infusion of capital that comes in.
Oh, then I misunderstood.
While the statute permits up to $2 million, we by no means would saturate or a single loan in a portfolio this small by any means. And that would be one of the jobs that the Finance Committee helps us manage. But again, we'll be establishing that in rule, and we have some provisions in this particular bill that says we'll work with bankers and others associations to ensure that there's fiduciary oversight.
Okay. Then I have two other mechanical questions. Just a few minutes ago, up on the floor of the Senate, we passed a bill that on further reflection gives me great pause. It was House Bill 4144, and this was a bill that would extend financial support from the heck to contractors if they were operating outside the Willamette Valley. And I would like some reassurance that as you process these loans, that you are going to ascertain whether or not there is the potential for multiple dipping. A contractor comes in, gets help through the heck under House Bill 4144, and then trots over to you guys and gets a second bite at the apple under this bill that we're contemplating in committee today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do a significant due diligence, and we work with partner agencies to determine where sources of proceeds are coming into a project. And obviously, we will do the best that we can based on the financial information provided to us in our underwriting and due diligence process.
And then last but not least, you mentioned UCC filings, and I'm just curious if you could comment on order of liens.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it depends on how we're structuring the financing for the project. If we're the sole source of financing, typically what the state would do would be to secure that single item with the UCC. It's a purchase money security agreement is the common language that's used when you're buying a piece of equipment with proceeds. And so we would secure that, and we would have the priority lien, and we will do lien searches in advance of funding our loans if in fact we are taking equipment as collateral, so that we know what the state's priority position is on equipment or any other fixed assets like real estate we might be using to secure the loan.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any other questions of Mr. Saris? Before we proceed, out of an abundance of caution, I would like the record to note that I sit at the pleasure of the Senate President on the OBDD Commission. LFO.
Okay, Madam Chair, LFO recommends adoption of the A2 amendment, which does include that $2 million cap on loans.
Before I entertain a motion, I would hope that in LFO's final recommendation that there might be the opportunity to hear a report back on the performance of this program.
We can get something and see if we can get something in the end of session.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move adoption of the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 1516.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? -2s are adopted. Representative Gomberg. Oops, LFO.
Madam Chair, LFO recommends that Senate Bill 1516 be amended by the -A2 amendment and move to full Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move Senate Bill 1516 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard Representative Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? Moves to full. We need carriers. Representative Gomberg volunteers to full and the floor, and we need a Senate and Representative Monroe, Senator Monroe, forgive me, volunteers for the Senate floor. Anything else to come before the committee? No. Colleagues, this may well be our last meeting. We are in that period of the session where it's hard to make hard and fast pronouncements. But I think Co-Chair Gomberg would join me in thanking you for your service on this committee. It's been a pleasure. And unless we are directed to meet again, I will.
Madam Co-Chair, before we adjourn, I would also like to extend that gratitude to the myriad of LFO staff members that have paraded before us on a regular basis, as well as Michael, who's been here for every single meeting.
Thank you very much for adding that. Colleagues, any other comments for the good of the order? Then I believe we are adjourned for the final time in the 2018 session. Thank you for your service on the committee.
Thank you.